Afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today's Tuesday, April 19, 2022. Let the record reflect. Time is 3:33 p.m. Today we have President, myself, Chair Schauer. We've got Vice Chair Reinbold. We have Senator Holland, Costello, and Kawasaki with us. Please turn off your cell phones. Naresh is helping from our office today. We've got Carrier Senate Records and Nate from the LIO. Two bills on the schedule today, but we're going to start off with a presentation from the Governor's Office on Senate Bill 241. And what that is we have a, it's not the bill per se that we're looking at. What we want to do is that since it's going straight from the fiscal policy and numbers to finance, there was no chance to talk about the policy. And so if you want to come on up, Miles, and put yourself on the record, and I'll explain why. Copy. As I continue, and the what we wanted to do as we discussed this was that we probably need to get this in front of the people so that we can talk about what the infrastructure bill does, what it brings to the state, you know, how the things can be used, et cetera, just so that a policy committee had a chance to discuss it and debate it and have it briefed and have something that wasn't so focused on the actual numbers of the dollars and where they were going. And that way this the public can hopefully take a look at this as well and be a little smarter on how things are going. So we do have on line as well Rob Carpenter from Deputy Commissioner from DOT. And of course, we have Miles Baker from the Governor's Office. That is the intent today. Once Miles puts himself on the record, present the presentation. For all committee members, I'd like us to just go ahead and ask questions as we go. That's the point of this, just to go through it and understand the policy more and how it applies. And that's pretty much it. So ask questions as you need to. Miles, you know how it works when you're ready.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Miles Baker, Infrastructure Investment Coordinator in the Governor's Office. And I appreciate the invitation to come and talk about the infrastructure bill. And what I'd like to do today is talk a little bit about the federal bill that passed here in November and what we've been working on to get to where we are today, and just talk generally about the policies involved. And I know the appropriation bill we introduced 3 weeks ago is in the Finance Committee, but I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have. I'm just starting on page two of the slide deck. Just a couple high-level things that we've learned, sort of summary items. As folks know, this passed in November. It's one of the things that we've been working to make sure everyone understands that this was a five-year reauthorization of surface transportation, EPA water and sewer, secure rural schools. There was a number of programs, Pittman Robertson, we're going to talk about here in a minute, but there were a number of federal programs, most of them transportation and EPA, and this was a five-year reauthorization. So Congress typically reauthorizes programs in five-year chunks. There was one due anyway, and that bill was then added to and became the infrastructure bill. And so there were a number of new investments, particularly the biggest one probably being in the area of broadband. There was a lot of energy provisions put in. But when you see those top line spending numbers, people need to remember you got to back out of it what we would have expected to get anyway over the next 5 years in surface transportation, in the water and sewer programs. So that's important to remember because over half of the bill was transportation related. Other important thing to remember is that
question I'm just going to ask them as we go, because like I said, a lot of questions I have a number myself. So really is it, and I'm not saying it like in a malicious way, but truth in advertising. So is it being sold kind of as a infrastructure bill that's additional and that's really not the case? So we're getting this in tranches every year or in some timeline that they establish that, because you're saying that like we're going to get a lot of this money anyways, although there was some added to it. So this really isn't a separate and additional spending necessarily across the board. Is that correct from what you're saying?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Because I think a lot of people think this is all separate money that we're getting. That's not the case, which is interesting. Senator Costello.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here, Miles. And my question has to do with the bullet about traditional state and local capital priorities are largely ineligible. Can you expand on that?
Sure. Senator Kawasaki, Costello, through the chair. Get my left and right mixed up here, literally.
That's a first, but that's okay.
The point there was to, knowing the legislature's in session and there's a lot of focus on capital, there's a lot of focus on CAPSIS, vertical infrastructure, priorities, projects that have been brought to you by local communities, those are largely ineligible for funding. Most of this funding is coming through existing federal programs or new federal programs that have specific guidance or that we expect to see specific guidance on, and competitive grant opportunities. So there are not, one of the other points in here, there coming on the heels of these four stimulus bills, where there was, relatively speaking, there was a lot of discretion given to states and legislatures and local governments even to take chunks of federal money and set up programs, try to get people to work, get people, money out in the economy immediately. That's not what this is. This is not a stimulus bill. It will certainly stimulate Alaska's economy. It'll grow a lot of things over the next multiple years, but it is not federal money that's available to build community centers, build fire halls, build those things that typically would come up through the legislative capital process.
Miles, quick question, then we've got a lot of hands on this one, I'm sure. If you were to say we had X amount of dollars, whatever, call it $1 billion over the next 5 years, how much more would we be getting? And I understand that's not the exact number, but in other words, so if we were expecting over 5 years to get X amount of dollars, how much more are we getting from this federal infrastructure bill? Does that make sense as a question? Than what we would normally expect if this wasn't passed in this the way they're doing it? And understanding that a lot of it's not eligible for those capital projects, et cetera, it's just whatever we're going to get. But if we were going to get $1 billion over 5 years, does this mean we're getting $1.5 billion with this bill passed because they added that to it? How much more would it be? Do you know?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, we don't have an exact number. I can point. The next slide three sort of tries to illustrate this a little bit of new spending versus what we base level spending. And we certainly have examples in DOT, for example, where we know we pretty much know already what the new spending is going to be. We can compare it to what we would have gotten, what we were getting in the base year anyway. So in that example, we typically, in our federal highway programs in the current year, we were getting about $550 million. And in the new bill, we're going to get about 650 plus, so it's about 110 million additional in the first year of this 5 years, and then it bumps up a little bit every year after. But you'd have, we don't, and we've been working on this for several months, but we don't have, it's specific to every program, and it's we don't have a nice neat figure of what that might be yet.
This briefing's helpful already, because I think that's not well understood, and quite frankly, I didn't understand that mechanics. It seems like it's we're getting a lot of extra on top of this, and that's not quite how it's working out. So I appreciate it already from day point one. I know I had to, were there other questions? Senator Kawasaki, I'll go left.
Thank you. Thanks. Can you you mentioned that most of this is ineligible for the capital priorities that exist currently through like the CAPSIS system, and then it would go to existing federal programs, competitive grants, and new types of priorities, I guess, infrastructure priorities, but with new guidelines. Do we know when those new guidelines are going to be finalized?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, some have been finalized. Some are forthcoming. I would expect that we will still be seeing, for some of the newer, it's interesting because looking at this bill, it's a reminder of how different the federal legislative process is from our own, and that you can have in a single bill, you can be creating programs, changing existing programs, authorizing spending, appropriating money, advance funding programs, There's a little bit of everything in this bill. So in some cases, like with the new broadband program, the legislative language was very specific, laid out, you know, what the program looked like, what the requirements would be, how the formulas would work. Other programs, for example, the Rural Ferry Service with the Federal Transit Administration, which is a new program that largely developed by the Alaska delegation, and it's created with three lines of statute and an appropriation, an advance appropriation for the first 5 years, $1 billion, $200 million a year, and we're still waiting for the Federal Transit Administration to take that relatively limited direction from Congress and expand it into more detailed program language. So it's a little bit, it just depends on the program.
Okay.
And follow then, up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks. I guess, okay, I'll just leave that one at that. But the for the money that comes in under this federal infrastructure bill that goes directly to local governments and tribes and other entities, when will we know what the required matches are going to be? And is the state prepared to help municipalities that can't come up with the particular match for those or that you know of?
Senator Kawasaki, to the chair. So similar to the guidance, so most of the guidance determines, we'll say, what the match requirement is. So it depends on the program. I'd say generally speaking, it's, you know, 20% match is pretty common. There's exceptions to that. There are a lot of times it will be a rural set aside. Some of the tribal programs are less stringent on the match or even don't require a match. The cybersecurity program, which is a new one, that will be coming through Homeland Security, through DMVA, that one, the guidance says that 80% of all the money that comes into the state will have to be subgranted out to local and tribal governments. The match changes over the 4 years of the bill. So in the first year, the match is 10%, and then it increases 10% every year over the 4 years of the program. So it's a little all over the map, but obviously we're tracking that, and for everything that's in the bill the governor submitted, we know what the match requirement is for those, and we've included that where it's appropriate. I think the governor certainly recognizes that going forward, there may be a need for the state to have additional match for certain opportunities that come forward, and that local governments will be having that same potential issue. So we haven't put forward any sort of generic match pots in this budget, but we, other than those that are required, for example, for DOT, we have the federal match pot for surface transportation, aviation, but we don't have a general match program established in this. But that's something we know that is going to be a continued conversation with the legislature and local. You'll see later that we do have recommended to grants both for Alaska Federation of Natives to continue their tribal navigation program that was pretty successful with the COVID money, and then a smaller one for the Alaska Municipal League to do the same sorts of things with local governments. And I think one of the outcomes of that work going forward will be some recommendations on what the state could or maybe the policy question on should the state help with match and what that looks like.
So just to clarify.
Okay, if it's a follow-up. But I just want to go to the next one because I've got a follow-up question on this one too. So we'll just come back to you if you want to hold it for a second. Senator Rembel, patient.
So I find this really fascinating. We all seem to be kind of on the same page, and I'm actually going to be echoing some of Kawasaki, Senator Kawasaki and Senator Costello's concerns and possibly even the chairman. But I'm going to be a little more direct, probably because of the comment on Alaska Airlines last night where you said you didn't want me on the plane or something like that. So I said, anyway, I guess I can be a little more direct with you. So my question is, why do you guys even want our support on SB 241? Why do you need us? Like, is this something with the RPL process, like where the governor just wants us to post his stamp of approval and he takes charge of the money and directs it how he wishes? Or is this where you guys really do need our, you know, the legislature's ability, like the Constitution says, to direct funds? So that's question number one.
Sure. Senator Reinbold, through the chair, I was happy to see you on the, just for the record, on the plane last night.
That's not what your comment was on the plane.
On your inaugural flight back to Juneau, maskless inaugural flight. But the, so this is, in essence, an appropriation bill, like any other appropriation bill. So in December, we made the decision to hold off on putting any infrastructure-related spending, with the exception of the Marine Highway, that program I just mentioned, because we just didn't know enough. We need to take time. And when the governor introduced the FY23 budgets to the legislature, we held off and said that when we knew more and we had our initial plan for what was coming to the state in the current or next fiscal year, we'd come forward with a bill. So that's what we've transmitted, and it's in essence an appropriation bill. It combines capital and operating. Some of it's supplemental to the current year. Some of it is, in essence, amendments to what was submitted in December. But we need all of the state agencies need legislative authority to spend money that's coming, whether it's coming through the federal government or state government. And then, of course, the few suggested capital grants I mentioned obviously need. So we need the federal, we need the legislative authority to do any of this spending. But it is different than the stimulus bills, because I think as you look through these items, we are not proposing and really don't have access to any discretionary federal money. So there was no, you know, here's a check, Alaska, for $500 million to build infrastructure, and that we could then propose a building plan, if you will, for you. This is what's come in through federal programs under federal restrictions, federal guidance.
Can I follow up? One question, and right back to, but this is related to the answer. You know what? Go ahead, Senator Ramel. Follow up. I'll go after you.
Okay, because this is a huge bill. I mean, it's an unbelievable amount of money. And I know a lot of it is federal, but I think that Senator Kawasaki's really important question about matches, I think, is absolutely critical. I'm going to ask my question in a little bit different way, because I didn't really get an answer. I just got the repeat of page one, which you've repeated like three times so far. The bottom line, did you work with each and every Senate district? Did you talk to legislators about this, or is this just something you guys kind of want a stamp of approval on, from the legislature, because it kind of looks like everything is kind of set in here, you know, like the total budget on page 17 is $571 million. And I mean, I certainly know that you guys didn't end up talking to my office about anything that we wanted in Senate Bill 241. So I'm just wondering, is this just directly from the federal government? Is this things that the Governor Dunleavy thought that he needed? Or did you actually work with the legislature on this? And then the second question I have is, can you define tribe? Because you said that there was a tribal navigation, et cetera, in here, and you want tribal and other entities. And I want you to describe the other entities as well. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Reinbold, through the chair, what I would say, and I think we have a slide later that would help sort of categorizes the bill into what I think you're getting at is how much of this is subjective, if any of it is subjective. There were not opportunities in this bill. There's nothing in the bill where we looked at a list of capital projects around the state and made determinations to stick them in this bill. I don't think you'll see anything like that in this bill. Again, these are established, for the most part, established federal programs. I think the biggest one, in fact, most of the projects that are listed in the bill are DOT projects that go through our regular project evaluation board, our project development process, our STIP process. I know Deputy Commissioner Carpenter is on the line. He could address that. But
so just to follow up, Miles, to Senator Rembel's question, and if you want to beg a question off until a slide later, that's fine, as long as we get make sure, sure. We're answering them. So I'm okay with that. It makes sense. You know, either directly or we can defer anybody's questions to the slide. But so to be more pointed in what Senator Rembel asked, if this is already established, it's federal money, it's mostly going directly to these federal programs, what do you need the legislature for with the bill process going through? I mean, I know there was some extra money, he said, but if it's directly going through them, then what do you really need us to do for this? That's not really more of a stamp of approval, because it does kind of sound that way, like, well, it's already kind of committed, that's where it's going, we need to stamp it. I know that maybe is not the case is what you're saying, but why not?
Well, so what I'd say, Mr. Chairman, is this is the start of that process. So this is what we've identified, the governor's identified, that to the best of all and all, and this is a moving target, but we got to get something out. And so this is, to the best of our knowledge, what we've been able to identify that will come to the state through federal programs for this year and next year. And we are introducing it to have that discussion with the legislature about we need legislative authority to receive and spend this money.
Just for receiving the money. And then, so will we end up in the RPL process at all here with this and or, you know, the timeline? What do you expect? That's a big deal, obviously, with bills and the battle we've had before here with that.
Sure. And that's the that is, you know, kind of the balance. There is a few things in here where we're recommending some state money to continue to to understand the opportunity and potentially respond to federal funding notices while the legislature is not in session. We expect those to happen in the next 6 months, let's say, before the end of the year. So there is the balance between getting some authority to maneuver and be able to pursue and not miss opportunities, and also be able to come back through the RPL process that's established through LBNA or next year through the budget process. Because again, some of this is going to come over the next 5 years. It's definitely not a one and done.
Okay. And I'm going to defer back to the vice chair because I know she had a question. I just wanted to follow up on that, and then we'll go to Senator Costello after that.
So I was really excited about the bill that we just passed out, SB 221. It was Senator Wilikowski's bill about the RPL process. We only get a couple really powerful things in the Constitution. That's one, mm-hmm. appropriations, and two, legislative authority. That's why I don't like the RPL process, and this feels like one big RPL, in my opinion. And I also don't like any of the mandates. I think you're very aware of that, between the mayor and the governor and the president, that you're stripping powers from us. And that's why I fundamentally just don't like the way that this was done. So my question to you is, when was this bill written? I believe we heard from Laura that the bill was written back in December, and yet you guys didn't bring this forth to us until April. So when was this bill written? Because I feel like you jumped 3 months. If what she said is accurate, then this legislation on a lot of these parameters were done months ago, and we're kind of getting the tailwind, and you just want our stamp of approval on it. Correct me if that's incorrect, but that's what we've heard. So when was this bill written?
This bill was being written right up until 3 weeks ago when it was introduced. So We have been, you know, I have been working to understand the federal bill since it passed in mid-November. We've been working with all of our federal or our state agencies to understand the funding. We had to wait, in some cases, wait until the federal government finished the fiscal year 22 appropriation process, which they didn't do finish until about a month ago. But for example, one of the items in here is an appropriation to the weatherization program to Alaska Housing Finance Corp. And up until a week before we introduced the bill, the estimates we were getting from DOE was that we probably would get $35 million. Now we think that's more like 18. So, you know, we've gotten this to you as soon as we could land on what we thought was a supportive number. And again, this is what the appropriation legislative executive process is about. We introduce an appropriation bill and legislature works it through their process and makes determinations of what authority ultimately gets sent back to the governor.
Thanks, Miles. We'll bounce to Senator Costello next, but I'll just remind everybody we don't have the bill in front of us, so I want to talk about the infrastructure bill, just big picture, so please try to keep it to that. If it ties directly, somehow we can discuss it, but this was to be a top-level presentation on policy, so we don't get too far into a bill we don't have. Senator Costello?
Thank you, and Mr. Chair, you'd asked earlier about perhaps Senator Reinbold, what you need from the legislature, and I do know that we have to pass legislation creating an Office of Broadband, or actually more specifically, an Office of Broadband needs to be established, and I was curious, Miles, why the governor didn't just create one through executive order?
Senator Costello, through the chair, we need, every state will have to have a broadband office. We can do that through appropriation. We've got the appropriation here to establish a broadband office. I know there's a bill going through the legislature that would do that through statute, which is another approach. We don't need a statutory change to establish the office. We're going to need to stand up an office and have some people, and we need some authority, spending authority to do that. That is a requirement of that. I think we wanted to, the governor created a broadband task force. They did a lot of work. They issued a report right around the time that, right before this federal infrastructure bill passed. And so we wanted to make sure we understood all those broadband task force recommendations, look at the final federal bill that passed, what the requirements were. And as of now, we feel it's sufficient. What we've got in this bill, we think is sufficient to set up the broadband office. And I know we've been communicating with the bill sponsor and the support we have for a legislative statutory approach to that as well.
Are you aware that the Labor and Commerce Committee has introduced a Senate companion to the Office of Broadband?
I am not personally.
Okay, so we did introduce a Senate companion to that. And I know that the federal legislation is very specific as to upload and download and latency and all of that. Is it your opinion that we have to set up an advisory board? I mean, I've read the legislation and I've been to D.C. and talked to our delegation, and it's my understanding that we just simply have to have an Office of Broadband, but the level of detail that's in the House version, I think, perhaps might get ahead of ourselves. I mean, if more information is coming about the grants and what have you, I'm just curious if the administration has an opinion about whether or not we have to have an advisory council, or if the Department of Commerce is already capable of identifying, you know, grantees through the process they already use. Does the administration have an opinion about that?
Senator Costello, I'm not the lead on that policy call on the broadband office. I've followed it pretty closely because it's a big part of this infrastructure bill. I think the state needs a broadband office. We think it belongs at Commerce. We've got the funding in this bill to do that. And I know that there's a lot more guidance to come from the feds.
So what I hear you saying is that the appropriation bill establishes the office of broadband and that there are more details to come. So what I'm hearing is that the legislation that's in the House and Senate is not necessarily necessary if that office is created in the appropriation bill.
I don't think I'm the one to opine on that.
Okay, because you just said earlier that the bill creates an office of broadband, and if it does, then that satisfies the requirement. And I'm not sure why we get into a controversial bill about who sits on a board when that's actually not even required.
The bill, so the our infrastructure bill would appropriate funds, federal funds that we anticipate receiving that would pay to hire the people to do the work required in a broadband office. It doesn't create statutorily a broadband office because it's an appropriation bill.
Thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know who wrote the version of the bill that's going through the process?
I do not.
So sticking with the slides and the intent of sticking to the policy as opposed to necessarily the bill, not afraid to dabble in the numbers and stuff is okay, just not don't want to talk about the actual Senate Bill 241, is as it shows here on your first slide or page two, Miles, you've got traditional state local capital priorities largely ineligible, which I was kind of surprised by that. Local governments, tribes, and other entities are eligible for most programs. So when you see that, I can see the difference in capital versus that, but are those local governments, tribes, and other entities eligible? Because many of the things you're talking about seem to be infrastructure related. You said about half of it is DOT or more. So those seem to be a bit in conflict. So can you clarify more when you talk about the bullet of traditional state and local ineligible, but local governments, tribes, and others are eligible? They're kind of at odds, at least the way it's written.
Sure. Senator Schauer, I think on the traditional state and local, that my inartful attempt to just say this isn't CAPSIS on steroids. This is not our ability to fund projects that would typically come to you from local governments and from your own state priorities for vertical sort of infrastructure build out. The last bullet refers to the fact, sort of emphasizing the fact that this isn't all going to come through the state of Alaska, that there are many programs in the bill, in the federal bill, both formula and competitive, that the eligible entities are local governments, even railroad utilities, nonprofits, tribes, higher education institutions.
So to clear my confusion, they could be CAPSIS, they could be infrastructure projects, it's just that it's not going to come through the process we're more familiar with in the legislature when we're doing it. Would that be a more correct way to say it? So they can, local governments, tribes, and other entities can get this, and it can be infrastructure projects, and some of it will be, mm-hmm. just not through us in the normal process. That's what I'm trying to understand and make sure I've got them sure. clearly delineated.
I think that's fair, particularly with the transportation, because you might have a road that's on tribal land, and that road could be funded through the Indian Reservation Road Program, or you could have a local road project that is submitted to DOT and is funded through the Community Transportation Program, both of which would be getting funding through this infrastructure bill. And both of those items are the type that could have also come through CAPSIS, and the legislature could have decided to spend general funds on them. But I think if a local community was expecting to build a high school gym or a community center or even a fire hall, there is not a funding source for those three types of things in this federal bill.
Okay, and we do, like I said, we've got Rob Carpenter and James Marsh as lifelines if there's a specific question that might make more sense like that one. So if you think it's appropriate, we'll tag them on, and then we're going to go Senator Costello, then Senator Kawasaki.
Oh, thank you. Miles, who's
I don't have the lifeline list, so I'm sorry.
So there, those you got two from DOT if you want to call on them or something that might make sense if they explain how it works, so you know.
Has there been any discussion about fraud or avoiding waste or any accountability with this massive amount of money coming, you know, our direction?
Senator Costello, this question had come up in an earlier hearing about that. There is nothing in the federal legislation itself that ramps up or implies that there should be, you know, any more scrutiny put on this than there just is normally through the GAO and through the and IG's office. And so, I mean, we expect that there will be the same level of scrutiny that's always put on it. I would say that one of the things that AFN in their tribal navigation program certainly did with the COVID money, and I expect will continue to do, as well as AML with local governments, is help with that sort of stuff. Because one thing this bill has done is created a whole tremendous new number of competitive grant opportunities. And in a way, if these entities are going to go after them, it's going to really stretch their capacity to hit all those, you know, not by any, you know, intentional malice or anything. It's just there's going to be that much more work coming through the process and a need to make sure that we hit all those right financial and accounting criteria.
Follow up.
You had mentioned that you're not the point person on the third floor for the broadband policy. Could you tell us who is?
Tyson Gallagher is the deputy chief of staff.
Senator Kosak?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Miles. So I guess I'm a little bit confused, but maybe you can clarify. So the $620 million that's coming to the state through the Fed, through the infrastructure bill, is being encumbered by $51 million in general fund from the state. Is that about right then? This is just off that little spreadsheet.
Okay. Let me just make sure I have that in front of me here.
This one's got
The one pager. And so just to clarify that then, so if a community wanted to do a project and say they were going to build a, or wanted to, you know, from time to time the city is partnered with the federal government on an intersection, for instance, and so the city does the project, the DOT or the federal government match pays for it. Would that be money that would come through the DOT, for instance?
Got a lifeline if you want it. Commissioner Carpenter, if you can hear me. Deputy Commissioner, sorry. I just upgraded. I don't know if that's an upgrade or not. If you can hear me, did you hear Senator Kawasaki's question and start putting yourself back on the record?
Yes, sir. This is Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Alaska DOT. I believe... Senator Murkowski, you were asking about the opportunities for local communities to receive funding through our DOT money. Is that the gist of it, sir?
Yeah. So the question was sort of dovetailed off Senator Chair Shower's question about a local project that had local support that could have been in CAPSIS, was funded or was requesting funding through the capital budget process, but it's also considered a federal project because it's like, say, it's an intersection, for instance. And from time to time, I know that the city, when I was on the city council, used to take advantage of DOT funds, which were mostly federal highway dollars. The city would pitch in a match to help pay for that. And I'm just wondering if that $673 million which has the GF match to it from the state, would be something that that particular city or municipality could participate in?
Sure. Very good question. Thank you, Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. You know, our transportation program from the Federal Highway Administration is broken up into multiple programs. A lot of it is based on our national highway system, our Alaska highway system, and a litany of other federally directed programs. However, one of those, which we have, is called our Community Transportation Program, which actually provides that funding for local communities to submit projects for inclusion in this program, where they get scored and weighed against other projects throughout the state. That's probably the biggest angle for local communities, other than, for example, say what we have is our it's not necessarily a pass through, but our programs which are related to our municipal planning organizations, like, and there's two of those in the state, the Muni of Anchorage and the Fairbanks North Star Borough has their MPO, we call them, where they receive, based on a formula from the feds, a certain amount of our program money to where they do what's called their mini STIP. It's called a TIP, their Transportation Improvement Plan, where they do their own planning, and they receive funding to make, like, intersection improvements within their boundaries. So there's two ways that a local community can get funding, unless it's, you know, if it's state infrastructure, they can certainly offer to sponsor or provide input that, you know, this section of the highway could use some work. And we of course listen to all local input on just about anything in the state. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's a good clarification. I did have another question based on that. And this is more of a policy question then, I guess, that, you know, there's $672 million. The state's, again, using $51 million of state funds to encumber that amount. Does the state anticipate municipalities having to come up with a secondary match for those dollars?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, there's a, you know, the state's generally, or the Fed Highway Program is generally a 9.25% match. Again, if it's part of their municipal planning organization allocation, the MPO allocation, they're required to come up with the 9.25%. If it's a state-funded program, we are responsible for that match. There's nowhere in there where there's a double match component, if you will.
Okay. And then I guess just the last question through the chair is that, so we're basically writing a big check for $673 million, and I guess what sort of input does the legislature have after this bill, or if this bill 241 were to pass at that point? I guess it's more of a policy question, but we don't know what directly this is going to go to at this point in time. So I guess when will we know exactly how these funds will be spent before we sign off?
Mr. Chairman, was that directed to me?
Miles?
Sure.
You want to take the policy, or want Rob to answer?
I can take a shot at that, Senator Kawasaki. So in that, and I think you're referencing the one sheet summary, and that first, that's why we laid it out this way, to sort of, decreasing levels of discretion. So this first, you know, rows 1 through 10, those are the items that are coming through those agencies through directed federal programs. And in some cases we know, so if you look at the first line there, DCCED, AOGCC, that's a new program for plugging abandoned oil wells on state and private land. So that's $32 million that's coming through. That's a new Department of Interior program. It requires no match. AOGCC will be, they're required to be the spearhead of that program as a member of the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission. And We've got 12 of these abandoned wells identified, and that's going to be work that goes out through contractors to plug and remediate those wells. So in that instance, we know exactly where that money's going. The very next thing on there, broadband, and again, these were just summaries on the details in the appropriation bill, is that's broadband planning money. So that's $6 million of federal receipt authority that we expect to get from the National Telecommunications Information Agency to set up our broadband office, do the initial administrative planning to develop the state's five-year plan for broadband. And that process, which will have a very robust public engagement and future legislative engagement, where we're identifying the technologies and the projects and all that. So this is just the initial money that we expect to get to start that planning process. So it kind of depends on the program, but ultimately this is all within the legislature's authority to approve or not.
Just one last clarification then. So just for like DOT, the Federal Highway, the electric vehicles, the bridge program, those are the ones that are noted here.
Mm-hmm.
Were those particular projects, are there particular projects, and were those particular projects just taken directly off the STIP, starting with the most need to the least need, or was it taken off of different, was it a pick and choose sort of situation at this point?
And, Rob, we're going to go to you on that one and give you one last chance to see if you can get the senator's name right, because I'm sorry, I got to call you out. You had Senator Murkowski and Senator Willikowski so far. You got some skis going, but you're not quite right yet.
I apologize, Mr. Chair and Senator Kawasaki. It's been a long day. Thank you for the question. Yeah, you know, we have a very prescribed process for our federal highway program. As you know, the statewide transportation improvement planning document is a highly public process where we basically evaluate our system throughout the state's national highway system. We use data to establish what facilities need work and the priority. We use safety data, which is very important. A lot of that is built into what projects we are doing and putting forth in this bill. So to the question, mostly that everything is coming off the STIP, we've had to advance some things in our 10-year plan forward, and we're working on a STIP amendment right now that will match this bill we have put forward. And I have James Marks, our program development director, is online, who can answer any number of details on the development process of the STIP, but that's a general gist of the situation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Rob. Just one other question, because we talked about sort of how a community might be able to take part in some of these funds that are coming to local governments, including the Community Transportation Program or an MPO. There's an MPO in Anchorage. There's an MPO in Fairbanks, and there will be an MPO in the MATSU here in the next year or so. So how will they be able to take advantage of those funds if it's already prescribed through the STIP?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. Well, as you know, they receive an allocation all by themselves. So AMATS, the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Study, I think, they receive X amount from our program, our Surface Transportation Block Grant, based on formula. And then same for the FMATS, or the FAST Planning, I think it's called now, up at Fairbanks. And as you mentioned, the MATSU Borough is in the process of standing up their planning organization because they've met the density requirements at this point. You know, that is kind of separate. They receive that. It's carved out from the rest of the pot because of the way an MPO is established under the Fed Highway. They receive a carve out where they make the decisions on how the funding is programmed within their MPO boundaries. That's kind of a separate program from what's called the Community Transportation Program, the CTP we call it for short, which is really where it's a statewide, any community can apply, and then projects, you know, there's a selection criteria that would go out. It would be a call for projects to all communities that, you know, here's some selection criteria we're looking for to provide projects into communities, of course, transportation projects, and please apply. And then those projects get ranked based on how much money is available and scored, and then grants are distributed to those communities.
Thanks for the questions. This is important to get to our communities. This is one of the reasons I was hoping to do this, so we understand the mechanics, not just the money and where finance is going to put it, because I want to know how it works, because I think this is the reason. So that was really good. Because of interest and time, Miles, I wasn't, you know, I have no time limit on this, but I didn't, you know, we don't have to be here for an hour and a half on this presentation. If you want to keep moving or slide through it, it's fine. And I have no problem stopping and ask questions. I just don't intend to, you know, try to get at least through your slide deck if we can.
Okay.
What you want to put
forward. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll go to slide three. And I think this addresses a little bit of the earlier question. So we've, you know, when this bill passed, you heard a lot of top line numbers and a lot of estimates of what was coming into Alaska. And again, we had to, you had to sort of back out of that what we would have expected to get anyway. You have to divide by five over 5 years. You have to subtract out what is competitive versus what is formula or allocation. But this gives you a good sense of, so the darker, larger circle is the, you know, total spending in the bill, and then the lighter, so there was $423 billion, let's say, of base spending, and then from what was new spending, and so the new spending is $550 billion, and that's what it's gotten most of the focus and all the national associations and everybody focused on. Well, what is the new spending? Because the rest of it was old spending, if you will. It's base level spending that would have come over those period of time. And of the new spending, it's, as I mentioned, it's split pretty evenly between transportation and then these other categories of infrastructure. And I've got a couple more slides that delve into that a little bit deeper. So on slide four, this just breaks it out, that new spending by federal agency. So you see there that USDOT got the bulk of it. And then you see the EPA, that's the water and sewer, Department of Energy, the commerce number there, that's is almost all broadband, and Department of Interior, Homeland Security, and then a variety of other agencies. And the next slide does that same split by category. So this is typically the category of investment. So for example, at the infrastructure symposium last week that AML was involved in helping set up, you know, they did breakout groups by these different categories. So transportation, energy and power. So that's the grid efficiency, hydrogen, carbon mitigation, rare earth elements. Then you've got the broadband number there, water, that's the EPA water, drinking water. And then resiliency, you know, this is a term that we've heard a lot since this bill passed, and a lot of people are, what is that? And so it's really money that's going towards making infrastructure more resilient to the impacts of climate, cyber attacks, drought, heat, floods, wildfires, weatherization. So good. There's a lot of money there in FEMA and in, you know, Great Lakes restoration. There's big chunks of money in this bill that just aren't coming to Alaska because they're for specific watersheds in the lower 48 or FEMA money that's going to the, you know, Gulf Coast, that sort of thing. That's the resiliency category. Environmental remediation, the program I mentioned through Department of Interior, the well plugging program is an example in that category. But it was mostly dealing with ecosystem restoration, addressing legacy pollutions, abandoned mine, brownfield mitigation, Superfund sites, that sort of thing. And then the public lands is the U.S. Forest Service Legacy Road Program. A lot of money in here for wildfire risk mitigation. So those are the general spending categories.
Senator Kawasaki?
Yep. Yeah, just a really quick question. I, you know, we're pretty clear on what rules and and stuff apply for federal highways? There's like certain things you need to do. DOT is really well versed. The legislature mostly is on these new programs with new money attached to them. Are there strings attached to them? Will, like, if we use the fire mitigation, we take advantage of the fire mitigation money, are there any strings that might be attached as far as the types of workers that are employed, whether they have to pay Davis-Bacon wages, and those types of things?
Senator Kawasaki, the short answer is yes. It's federal money, so there's quite a few strings attached. There are some in the wildfire, for example. One of the programs that is in the bill, that's a new program on, it's a community wildfire defense grants, which Division of Forestry will subgrant out to local communities, and we haven't seen the total guidance on that. But we would expect that there will be a list of eligible activities. So if the community gets the grant, they will have discretion in what types of activities they want to do within a laundry list of eligible activities. So fire breaks, potentially some training of volunteer fire department, folks, bucking up firewood, taking down beetle kill. There'll be a host of eligible activities, and within that broad grant that a community may get, they will have flexibility. But generally speaking, they won't be able to build a fire station with that money, for example. We don't think.
Thanks. So my question had to do a little bit more with if we do, or if a community does take advantage of these federal funds, if there are strings attached in the future, and if the administration has decided that we should just take every dollar that's available to us under the federal infrastructure bill, or if they have, as an administration, I guess this would be for you, decided that maybe there are some rules or future strings attached that are just not worth accepting the particular grant and money that's coming in through the federal program.
Mm-hmm. Senator Kawasaki, that's a good question. And I know when I took the job originally, what the governor's direction was, make sure that we're looking at all of these funds and that we understand what those implications are. So far, at least in this first year of funding, we haven't identified anything that is an opportunity for the state that we're passing on in terms of at least asking the legislature for the authority to receive the money. But that's not to say that there may not be future opportunities that at least this governor wouldn't think is appropriate for the state or doesn't think that the trade-off in the strings are sufficient or appropriate.
Continue.
Okay, so that sort of was the overview, I guess, just generally of what was in the federal bill. And so I'm on slide 6, and as we sort of understood that and what did we use to sort of develop this initial proposal for the state, and we've hit on several of these, but really identifying, what we could clearly identify was coming in either in the current fiscal year or in the budget year you're debating right now in the legislature for FY23, we became very clear of this need to continue funding coordination and outreach and implementation, and you see that in this bill. Governor's direction was maintain pressure on UGF spending. So we've identified what purely is match to receive federal funds, and anything that's not match is what we've broken out here to make it clear these are more policy calls, discretionary items. Also, to the extent there was any, and I don't really like to use the term discretionary because I don't personally, I think this is a lean, mean bill, to be honest, having studied this for 4 months, but there are some opportunities we think is worth putting state funding into pursuing. But we wanted to make sure everything in here has a direct nexus. There's a tight nexus to what the federal policy has been established in this bill. Moving right along, so this is more slide 7, really more of a finance committee type of slide, but it just shows you it broke out. As I mentioned, this is purely appropriation bill, but it does include capital, it includes operating, it includes some money for the current year as well as the coming fiscal year. And so this just breaks out by fund source those different categories. It's $1 billion in total spending. $868 million of that is federal receipt authority, and there's about $80 million of UGF and $56 million of other. Most of that other is actually federal money that's coming in that is, I believe, capitalization of our drinking water funds, and then it comes out as a different flavor of funding. The next slide, on slide 8, is sort of a high-level summary of this spreadsheet we've been referring to, and Senator Kawasaki made reference to. But so the bulk of this legislation is just straight up federal programs. Most of them existing programs. There are a few new ones in here, like the EV infrastructure, the bridge program, that well plugging program I mentioned. But it's $56 million of match, what we would consider pure match. So 70% of the UGF in this bill is match. And then the governor, there were a few items, and you'll see those on the spreadsheet, that we felt with a little extra state funding would put those federal programs into a more of a state-focused direction that's beneficial. So there's a little less than $3 million for 2 cybersecurity projects, some increases to our SPAR database that will allow us to, we think, go after some of the opportunities in the EPA funding for brownfield sites, and then $3 million for critical minerals mapping. So there's quite a bit of money in here for critical minerals, the federal level, but we want to make sure as we're out doing that work that we're also getting a good inventory of our own. And then I mentioned the infrastructure coordination, so that's in the governor's office. That is the grant to $2.5 million to the Navigator program at AFN, and $500,000 for AML. And then the next one I've got a separate slide on, so maybe we can just skip over, but that's the real competitive opportunities. This is what I would say is the biggest policy call, if you will, in the bill, on pursuing Department of Energy opportunities that will be forthcoming. Slide 9, I didn't realize I had the slide. So slide 9 just breaks out those 3 coordination appropriations I mentioned. And slide 10, which is the last one I think we have in here, Mr. Chairman, is what I'd like to spend a little time on. That's this sort of last category. So there's $5.5 million of UGF that we're proposing to pursue really 4 categories of large opportunity for Alaska. These are all Department of Energy opportunities that were put in the federal infrastructure bill. The first one is in electric grid modernization. And I want to make sure I find my notes here. So the federal legislation has $5 billion in it for a variety of opportunities and to support activities around preventing outages, hardening the grid against weather and other disruptive events. There's another $5 billion for research and development on enhancing electrical reliability. There's $1 billion specifically to modernize and upgrade infrastructure in rural and remote areas of the state. And there's a new transportation facilitation program, which is a DOE grant program to support infrastructure on the electric grid. So we're proposing $1 million to AEA to, in essence, spend the next several months further identifying those opportunities. They've already started that work with the Rail Belt Utilities and the other rural utilities in the state to put together teams to potentially go after what we anticipate will be federal funding opportunities over the next 2 quarters. And similarly, in these other areas, clean hydrogen technologies development, there is $8 billion in this bill to fund no less than 4 regional clean hydrogen hubs. On all of these, it's critical that we get involved in this now, because in many of these instances, these are going to be initial opportunities that DOE identifies. So these regional hubs, for example, they're going to make this decision within the next year on where these regional hubs will be and where they're going to deploy this $8 billion of federal money. And on all of these areas, these are areas where the federal government, through this bill, has determined that the United States needs to pick up its game in these areas. And they think, because there's so much research and development required to do that, they want to make that investment, but they want to do it in a way that there's a commercialization opportunity on the other end, so they can, you know, kickstart the innovation and have it transition into commercial, private sector, non-government supported activities. And that may be over 5 years, 10 years. And so HDC has done a tremendous amount of work in the hydrogen area as a way to future-proof their own AKLNG project. And so we are proposing money to continue to support that effort. All of these will be joint efforts. So there's already been DOE has put out requests for comment or requests for information on most of these grants. And we have worked, and we, using the term we collectively, the state, it's been the university, DNR, HDC, ASRC in some cases, Conoco, Usabelli. We've had joint teams working on these to make sure that Alaska puts in a response, so that as DOE refines what these funding opportunities will look like, that Alaska's uniqueness and Alaska's potential competitive advantages in these things are already embedded in these funding opportunities. So that work is ongoing, but these will be fairly technical notices of funding opportunity, and that will require teams. You know, we will be doing content development, subject matter expertise, technical writing. So in each case, we think $1 million to put these responses together. And we expect that activity to be happening between now and when the legislature meets again. And we don't want to miss these opportunities when these funding notices come out. Now, should we be successful as a state in any of these areas, we would expect then to be back before the legislature to talk about the funding that would come forward, what any sort of non-federal match would be required, that sort of thing. So I'm happy to talk more in more detail on those 4 areas, but I wanted to at least highlight them.
I think, Miles, in the interest of time, we're a little over an hour past on this one, because we do have 2 more coming up. I'll see if there's any final questions or comments. So because we do have another bill presentation first intro. I think I got a lot of what I needed out of this, which was helpful to hear policy and mechanics, how this was going to work, because there's things I didn't understand that are more clear to me now. There's actually some more questions, though. That's typically happens. And as some of the notes were passing, you know, this is in some ways kind of a blanket appropriation. There's a lot of money at stake here, and there's still a lot of questions out there for us, too. So something we're all going to have to keep an eye on. So that's my take on it for now. And clearly the legislature is going to have to keep its eyes on the ball with this one. Do we have final comments, questions from anybody? Senator Kawasaki?
Thank you. And this goes to the question about strings attached for federal appropriations under the Infrastructure Act. The last three projects you mentioned were the electric grid modernization and the clean hydrogen and the carbon capture. Department of Energy under the Obama administration had made a lot of those funds available under the, it was a new division within the Department of Energy relating to renewable energy. And so for those 8 years, we saw sort of a growth, but a lot of those had strings attached as far as trying to get states and states off of other forms of fossil fuel energies. And I just want to know if there's any strings attached to those particular funds that we know of at this point. And then the second question is just not related to that, but dealing with infrastructure and construction inflation. I talked to Alicia Amberg at the Associated General Contractors not too long ago about what their inflator is, and is Department of Transportation in particular using those sort of inflators to kind of figure out how much money each project will generally cost here in the near term. Thank you.
Senator Kawasaki may refer that second question to the DOT if they're still on the line, but in terms of the first one, I think that's clearly we will, as a state, collectively have to evaluate, and some of these are industry partnerships. I mean, in the case of the rare earth critical minerals, those require an industry partner, an academic and industry partner. So we will be having to assess those opportunities as we get further down the road and understand what is the state's willingness and capacity to accept a rare earth demonstration facility in either interior Alaska, which is where there's an interest, or in Southeast Alaska, and between, you know, UCOR and CVRM or whoever the commercial partners are in the state and the federal government, what is our willingness to participate in that and our capacity to do it.
Thank you. And Rob, did you hear the second question from Senator Kawasaki? Can you take that one, please?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. If I could pass over to my program development director, he has a little more insight on that, how it's affecting our outlook, if you will.
Go ahead, James, if you're ready.
Yeah, thank you. For the record, this is James Marks, Director of Program Development, Statewide Planning. Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, inflation is on all our minds. We've been watching estimates for projects and bids for the past year and a half, and we've seen a steady uptick. We've received presentations from some of our industry partners, like the Association of General Contractors, who are saying nationally, 20% across the board, but we're not seeing it. In even strokes like that. So steel, oil, some of these things are having kind of disproportionate effects on the program. And we're not at the point yet where we're going to apply a inflationary factor, because we are looking at implementing mitigating strategies. So things like earlier notices for bids to promote more consistency and more competitiveness in the market, trying to create steady flows in programming by region so that our partners can build capacity and have a presence that might lower costs, breaking up big projects. So the big picture is yes, we are absolutely looking at it with a laser focus, but we're not applying an inflationary factor at this time as we try to figure out how we can mitigate instead.
Okay. And Miles, we're going to stop it there just for the interest of time. I appreciate you bringing this in front of the committee. It's nice to have a chance to listen to this from those that don't have the privilege of sitting in finance, both for the policy and how this is going to work, because it is a lot of money and there's a lot of interest, and the public as well, and misconceptions. So thank you for agreeing to come give us that policy brief, and for the time, and for the folks that were online. Take care. Sure. We're going to move on to Senate Bill 57. I'm going to go a bit out of order here, and hopefully we'll get to public testimony. We've already done it on Senate Bill 167, Governor's Election Bill, but we may not get there today because we have Senator Hughes that is standing by. So we're going to go ahead and invite them up to the table at this time so we don't miss that. Senate Bill 57 is an act establishing a violation for hindering the Alaska Sunset Commission relating to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, relating to the duties of the legislature, relating to the Legislative Audit Division and the Legislative Finance Division, establishing the Alaska Sunset Commission to review and make recommendations on discontinuation of or changes to state entities, and relating to the powers and duties of the Alaska Sunset Commission. Senator Hughes, you're at the table when you're ready.
Please. Yeah, thank you. I'm Shelley Hughes, Senator for District F, and thank you for having me and for allowing us to begin a conversation, which I think is important when revenues are high. This bill, I'm going to say right off the bat, it needs some work, but it's a conversation we need to have. How many years have we known that we need to adjust the constitutional spending cap? It takes a lot to get an amendment through. We haven't done that. We've got high oil prices right now. So I'm just going to explain in general what the intent behind this bill is so that we can all begin to think about it, and then this would be a work in progress. So when we watch our finance committees and the commissioners come before the table, we are humans. There's human nature. And commissioners are going to present kind of what they see and what they want the finance members to know to protect their employees who have food to put on the table for their families, et cetera. And I'm not pointing fingers, but that is just human nature. And yet the finance committees are really limited in even their staff and the number of hours to be able to examine what can be a $14 billion budget. So the concept behind this was birthed out of watching what happens in a very nonpartisan way when our legislative auditor comes before us on, for example, boards and commission bills. And they present an audit and they say that things that need to be fixed. And generally, it's not a partisan thing. We respect the auditor as not having skin in the game and reviewing it very objectively and making suggestions, and we usually take those into account, and we do the necessary changes to the statute. So with that, I was wondering, is there something like that that could help us in our process here? And discovered that Texas had started something a number of years ago, and it was a sunset commission. So that's the idea behind this. And it's not just for the legislature, but it's also for the governor. Every year, the governor, he or she, would be building their budget. They would have an ability to look at the review by this objective entity. It would be an audit commission that would be made up of professionals who know how to do it in a way where they're looking for efficiency, they're looking for effectiveness, they're looking at examining the cost, how the process is in a particular office, a division, a department. They're looking to see if they're meeting the statutory requirements, if they're adequately providing the service to Alaskans. They are looking to make sure the constitutional obligations of that division or department are being met. And then they would do a report. Well, we all know what happens when we receive reports. We get lots of reports, right? It's the ones that when we know something's going to sunset that we actually don't let it collect dust. We actually look at it because we know if we don't take action, the board, for example, would sunset. So that's one of the works in progress, because by our Constitution, we cannot sunset a department. For instance, if the audit commission were to review a department, technically by our Constitution, we couldn't sunset the department. However, we could sunset agencies or offices or divisions within that department. And so that is one of the things the bill does not yet address, but I think we need to, because what we need to happen is we need the people in this building who's ever serving in future years to actually take up this professional report by people that are nonpartisan, objective, with their recommendations of how we can do government more efficiently and better serve Alaskans. And so that is the point behind this bill. And if you'd like to hear a few more details about how it's currently set up, Mr. Witt here can certainly do that. But I just want to say again that with high revenue, we've gotten in trouble before. Downstream, you can get in trouble because you can add to programs and grow things, and then we have a problem when revenues fall short. So there's never a better time, I think, now when we have $115 oil prices to look at something that will help us stay in line, make sure that we're adequately providing services for on behalf of Alaskans, but doing it in an efficient and effective way. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing me out on SB 57.
We'll open up to the committee members for questions or comments. Senator Costello.
Thank you. I appreciate you introducing this bill. Are you familiar with Mike Chenault's version of a similar bill? And I think his rotated audits of the entire department. That's my first comment. And then your bill has the members they're not paid. Is that also what Texas does? And have you considered having university students who are studying to be accountants perhaps do the work? I'm just curious. I mean, there are so many divisions in state government that actually go through the entire 15 departments and get all this work done. It's probably a years-long endeavor. And I support, more audits. I actually have looked at the state of Kentucky. They have an elected state auditor with a $10 million budget and complete autonomy in terms of, what they look at. And, the result of that investment of money is that they find efficiencies and they actually are able to make changes. And then we, as a legislature, can make, better informed, decisions about government.
Yeah, thank you. And through the chair, Senator Costello, former Speaker Chenault's bill was more about performance and if they were meeting the goals and meeting their mission. This is more comprehensive, and we get into the weeds as far as not just meeting the statutory requirements, but even how the process goes and to make sure, just like the private sector is going to want to make things are streamlined. And so that's what we want to see with government. I also want to mention that you can't just have a floating agency out there that's totally independent. You have to plug it in. It either has to be plugged in the legislative branch or the executive branch. We plugged it in the executive branch, but it would be independent, somewhat like the Alaska Railroad, where it is an entity. And I'm trying to remember your last point. I didn't note it down. Did you have another one?
I think it was about the way the bill is written, that these individuals are not compensated.
I will let Mr. Witt, but we do expect, in fact, we expect this to be something that would be pretty robust as far as, and that would be one of the things we'd have to weigh. If you want to really keep a check and balance on the size and scope and what's happening, there is going to be a cost to it, so there would be paid employees. If Mr. Witt could respond.
Thank you. Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Costello, the Texas Sunset Commission is made up, the commission members themselves is entirely made up of legislators. So in Texas, you have five senators, including the presiding officer, presiding officer. Technically in Texas, the presiding officer of the Senate is lieutenant governor. But their majority leader, I think it's Speaker Pro Tem or President Pro Tem, and the Speaker of the House are the co-chairs of it, and then it's all legislators. This would, again, the bill sponsor is trying to make this as nonpartisan as possible. The other piece about Speaker Chenault's bill, HB 30, which was passed in the 28th legislature, the provisions of that bill are set to sunset next year. So it will get to within a year or so, legislative budget and audit will no longer be performing those duties. I would also mention to say that this takes more of a comprehensive approach to the audit and to looking into particular agencies. And as the bill sponsor mentioned, the provisions of HB 30 that were passed in the 28th legislature are not as intense and detailed as what the proposal in this bill is.
And may I add to that, please, Mr. Chair? Through the chair, Senator Costello, and speaking with Chris Curtis also, because that didn't have a sunset provision per se, it was, even though they've been doing the work, it hasn't actually resulted. That's where the sunset component is important. So trying to not be nonpartisan, we're talking about professionals, CEOs, people very skilled in the private sector having to do with finance and business operations and management, HR management. Those kind of people would be on the commission. They would be appointed by the governor, confirmed by the legislature, and then there would be paid staff, auditors, that would make up, would do the reporting and report to the commission that then that would make the report available to both the governor and the legislature each year. And the rotating schedule for departments also, right now we have it presented on a pretty long stretch. We'd like to tighten it up. It basically depends on how much your staff, how many staff, how quickly they could go through the rotation. Ideally, you probably want to go through all the departments every 5 years. I think our rotation is maybe like 12 or 14 years. It's much too spread out, so that would be one of the fixes I would suggest in the bill.
Have you thought about having the standing committees that oversee that subject matter deal, you know, essentially be the commission, and so then you can have multiple audits going on at the same time?
You could, but again, I was trying to get away from the partisan, the majority, minority, Republican, Democrat, just because I saw how nicely it worked with our legislative audit and how we respect that person as a professional without skin in the game and really take their recommendations in a different kind of way than if it were made up of people in this building. And I will mention, perhaps Mr. Witt can mention a little bit about the Texas Commission as far as when it was founded and what they have done and how it worked there. Do you have that information? You actually have.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, since we only have 2 minutes left with the committee, could that be information that they send to your office? I'd be interested in looking at that. Just another option.
This was an intro brief anyways, so we wanted to get out on the record to have the conversation. So would you be willing to do that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Buddy Witt, for the record, I can provide the information, kind of an overview of what they do, what they've done since 1977 when it was instituted in Texas. I'd be happy to do that. And also for the committees, I just want to put this out there. We don't, of course, have time for a sectional. The meat of the bill is located in Section 9. That is really all the bits and pieces of what we're proposing with this commission. The other items are just conforming amendments to give the commission the same kind of powers and teeth that legislative budget and audit has when it comes to being able to do their job and do it efficiently. That's all I wanted to add.
So this would be a good bill for next year, introduce in the next session and get it moving with one expire. Just last minute comments and we're going to go to the last thing. Everybody good? Thanks, Senator Hughes and Buddy. Appreciate you guys coming out. I have one thing to ask the committee. We have Senate Bill 167, which is the governor's election bill. We had hoped there was going to be some amendments. There weren't. There are two people that called in to testify since we had noticed public testimony for hoping for those changes. I give them 2 minutes apiece. It's 4 minutes. Is everybody willing to go ahead and let them stay? Staff, is that okay? Carrie, is that all right? Okay. So we're going to go ahead real quick to Senate Bill 167, an act relating to elections, voter registration ballots, system of tracking and counting for ballots, et cetera, from, as request from the governor. This bill has been previously heard in public testimony, but like I said, we were hoping to have some amendments at this point. They're not there yet. So for the two that are online, Robert and Morgan, just understand that the bill is going to change. It hasn't been amended yet, but I know that it's going to be if it is moved. So just FYI in your comments, you'll probably be talking to a bill, I'm guessing that neither of you probably like, but is going to change. So with that being said, we're going to open up public testimony on Senate Bill 167. Seeing and hearing none, we're going to go online. We're going to start with Robert Welton. And if you could hear me, Robert, put yourself on the record with name, who you represent, your location, and 2 minutes, please, just based on time. Thank you.
Sure. Name is Robert Welton. I'm representing myself, live in Douglas, Alaska, and just had to make a couple of brief comments. I think SB 167 has good ideas and a few bad ones. On the good side, the bill provides authority for thorough checking of our voter rolls and also mandates audits to election machines and having a voter tracking system. And I think those are all great ideas that will improve the security and trust in the system. One bad idea, though, is the bill changes PFD automatic voter registration from opt-out to opt-in. And the people voted to make it an opt-out system in 2016. So this bill ignores the will of the voters and disenfranchises voters. According to testimony this year from Division of Elections, 13,000 new voters are registered under this program, and 4,299 of them voted. This provision would essentially throw those votes out. Another bad idea in the bill is requiring voters to reapply every 4 years for an absentee ballot. There's no good reason to force voters to jump through all these hoops for 4 years. Again, the Division of Elections testified in this committee that there was no significant election fraud in the last election, so there's no reason to make absentee voting harder. The third bad idea in the bill is requiring signature verification on all absentee ballots. Currently, the Division of Elections Absentee Ballot Review Board reviews ballot envelopes, verifies signatures on any questionable ballots. This bill opens up the absentee voting process to partisan abuse because all will have to be checked. After a similar law was passed requiring all signatures verified on absentee voting, Texas had roughly 30% of their absentee ballots in a recent primary rejected. So let's not open the door for abuse on this process. The final bad idea in my mind has to do with ranked choice voting. The bill mandates wordy, confusing language that has to be added to voter pamphlets. This, to me, is just an attempt to sow confusion and doubt before the system has even had a chance to prove itself. So I don't like any of these things. And for that reason, due to these shortcomings, I oppose this bill moving out of committee without significant amendments. Just the last thing I wanted to do before letting you all go and hear the other person waiting, because I wanted to thank you for taking the time to listen to me, and also wanted to thank you for your service to the state of Alaska. We don't always agree, but I respect the time and commitment that you have all made to make this state a better place, so thank you for your service.
Thanks for calling in today, Robert, and thanks for being patient, the both of you, for waiting so long. Morgan Lim, we're going over to you. Please put yourself on the record, name, who you represent, location, and if you could keep it 2 minutes, appreciate it. Please begin.
Thank you, Chair Schauer. For the record, my name is Morgan Lim. I'm a Juneau resident, and today I'm calling on behalf of Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates. CPAA is in opposition to SB 167, a voter suppression bill imposing a web of barriers on access to the polls. While SB 167 claims to be combating so-called election fraud in Alaska, this is a baseless an unsupported claim. It's a bill in search of a problem that will ultimately result in voters becoming disenfranchised. PPAA supports policies that make it easier for all eligible voters to register to vote and cast a ballot and ensure that all votes are counted equally. Alaska, like jurisdictions across the country, is plagued with inadequate polling places and increasingly limited voting hours and options. PPAA opposes this bill's attempt to eliminate permanent fund dividend voter registration to give all eligible voters an equal opportunity to participate in our democracy. It is our responsibility to proactively afford citizens the chance to exercise that right. Automatic voter registration not only streamlines the registration process and casts a wide net to eligible voters, it sends the message that state government is committed to the idea that voting is a right and not a privilege. Thank you for taking the time to hear public testimony. Again, Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates opposes SB 167 and urges you not to pass it out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Morgan, for calling in today and for being in our 2 minutes. You've always been really good about that. I don't see anybody else online. Okay, we're going to go ahead and close the second public testimony period on Senate Bill 167. And at this time, we're going to set Senate Bill 167 aside. That's going to conclude our business for today. Thanks for everybody's patience and staying a few minutes over. No Senate State Affairs Committee meeting this Thursday, April 21st. The next one will be the following Tuesday, next Tuesday, April 25th, 2022 at 3:30 p.m. back here. Seeing no other business before the committee, we're going to gavel out at 5:08. Have a good day.